This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, here we go. Friday night, the biggest and best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell, and thank you so much for joining us on this Friday. I'd love to hear from you. Always on Twitter, at eRadioSports. Info at eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. We love our listeners. We also love our sponsors. So think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low, low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. You're going to love our show tonight. We've got another amazing lineup coming your way over the next 2 hours. We're ready to go around the horn. We're going to talk some MLB. Tim Kirchen from ESPN is going to be joining us. Also, we've selected a very special book review on the Oakland A's. We're going to go way back to 1979. Billy Ball, Billy Martin, and the Resurrection of the Oakland A's. Dale Tafoya is the author, and we're going to be visiting with him. And also got some good news out of the PGA. The Colonial will be set and underway in the month of June. So something we can look forward to. It's the first event back since the season was suspended. Of course, our special guest will be Larry Miller. Always a special guest in the house, hanging out with the Big E. Always does an amazing job, and that is my producer, Jack McCraw. Good evening, Jack, and how are you doing through the COVID-19?
Every day is getting better. I see the light coming towards us closer and closer, so just hanging in there one day at a time.
I know we were talking earlier. You're super excited about some of the baseball guests that we will have on tonight, and I know how much you love the game. So how big of a challenge do you think this has been for Major League Baseball to try to figure out a condensed schedule? I mean, it is complicated.
So at least with Arizona, there's enough spring training complexes to where they could use, I believe, 11 Major League ready facilities to use for all 30 teams. But it's going to be an incredibly challenging dilemma to try to get all of these rosters to Arizona, have them just sit in a hotel and basically wait to play. And as soon as they're done playing, go back to the hotel.
Okay, so say it starts in Arizona, but I have to wonder too, just quickly, I mean, how many games do you think that they would likely play? I mean, the number that I'm hearing, Jack, is 108.
108 sounds fair. I think 100 games is what baseball wants to have as a minimum this season in order to have a full quote-unquote season under their belt.
Hey, we're going to continue this conversation with analysts from baseball tonight. We love him. Tim Kirchen from ESPN will be with us here in Hour 1. Come on back, the next generation of sports radio. That is SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 1, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Many different ways to connect. Join us online. We'd love to hear from you tonight. Always on Twitter, at eRadioSports. Info at eRadioSports.com. Twice is nice. PodcastArena.com. And as always, think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. You can get guaranteed low, low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Well, as promised, in our next segment, we are going to take time for some baseball. We're going to go around the horn. It has been a very difficult 2020 due to the global health crisis and the pandemic. We don't have sports to watch right now in order to stop the spread of the coronavirus, but there has been talk that Major League Baseball is focused on a proposed plan that could get the season underway and have players play without fans and just broadcast on television. However, would it be putting players at risk, even if they play in an empty stadium? We are searching for some answers tonight, and so delighted to have back with us from ESPN baseball analyst and author, the great Tim Kirchen. Good evening, Tim, and how are you doing?
Well, Alyssa, everybody's healthy here, and I hope everyone's healthy there that listening. It's a very difficult period, but staying safe is the most important thing.
Absolutely. That is paramount. Well, listen, we all want baseball back as soon as possible, but it really does bring up a number of concerns and issues that have to be worked out before it returns. So, Tim, you know, what are your thoughts on the proposed plan to return this year?
Well, I don't think there's any. The only thing I'm relatively certain of is that if we play this year, we're going to play without any fans in the stands, at least at the beginning. I just can't see a scenario where anything starts, say, before July, period, but before July with anyone in the seats. And we all have to understand that these proposed plans have roadblocks all the way through them. And I think, say, the biggest roadblock might end up coming from the players. They want to play, and they want to play now. Mm-hmm. But they want to play in a safe environment, and they want to play in a major league environment. And let's face it, if they only play in Arizona, we're going to play in one state before no fans, and the players are essentially going to be quarantined for 4 months and in some cases not even seeing their family, that doesn't sound like a major league season to me or a very good life for a player. So a lot has to go on before that is ever actually accepted and put into place. And we've heard Mike Trout and Clayton Kershaw and some other players speak out saying, well, maybe there's a better way to do this, because right now there are no good answers.
Well, and you have to wonder just how difficult that would be on the players being separated from their families for an extended period of time. I mean, Tim, many of them, they have young children. And I believe Mike Trout, you just mentioned him, I think his wife's pregnant, right?
Yeah, so this is part of the issue. Just imagine playing baseball for 4 months, an impossibly difficult game to play as it is. Now you're playing in front of no fans. You're playing, and after the game, you go back to the hotel, and you pretty much have to stay there and order room service every day. I mean, look, there are far, far, far greater hardships than all of that. But this is potentially what we're looking at. And Alyssa, I covered the 2015 game in Baltimore where there were no fans in the stands. Mm-hmm. And it was the strangest game I've ever covered. Chris Davis hit a homer in the first inning, and it was the eeriest thing. He ran around the bases in total silence. And Buck Showalter told me he could hear everything that Gary Thorne and Jim Palmer, the two broadcasters, were saying from the press box. And Caleb Joseph, the catcher for the Orioles, told me he's catching a major league game, uh-huh, and he can hear the announcements in the press box. And he's thinking, wow, I didn't know that. That's very interesting what was just announced. But it was fascinating that day because it was unique. It will no longer be unique if this is going on all over, say, the Cactus League.
You know, too, Tim, there'll be a new level of appreciation for the fans, right? Because as a player, I mean, you feed off of them, that emotion, that energy.
You do. And look, I understand, I really do understand the importance of fans. But if baseball is determined to start playing again and as quickly as possible, as long as it's safe, I just don't see a way that we're going to have fans in the stands, at least at the beginning. And when I say the beginning, I'm not just talking about the first week. It's going to have to go on for a month to see if it works at all. And then there's a legitimate question, how many fans are going to come back once they're allowed back in the stadium? And there are a lot of scared people out there, and rightfully so.
Yes.
Are they going to want to pack into 40,000 into a stadium or even 10,000 into a stadium? These are big questions, and there are so many questions now that don't have any legitimate answers.
Baseball analyst with ESPN, Tim Kirchen with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio. And you talk about how difficult it would be as a player to be basically holed up in your hotel. You're not around your family or your friends, of course, your teammates. But, you know, it's one thing to talk about a player, their physical skill set, but there is real power in emotion. I mean, that plays a big part of who you are as an athlete, and emotions influence sports performance. You got to feel good.
Yeah, it really does. And again, I'm hopelessly biased on this, but I think baseball is the hardest game in the world to play. And sometimes you just have to get away from the ballpark and go somewhere else or do something else. But if the only place in theory that you can go, allowed to go, is back to your hotel, and that's the only place you can go back and recover in some way from the game, I'm not sure that's going to help the psyche of a lot of players, especially the ones who are really struggling. Now, we are still way far ahead of ourselves here, but that is a scenario that has to be considered if this is the way that baseball is going to go. And I repeat, the players really want to play as soon as possible, but it has to be safe, and it has to be in a situation that is amenable to them.
Okay, so the players, they're hungry, they want to play, and they're ready for a modified MLB season, perhaps in Arizona. But what are you hearing, Tim, from the front office and from some of the managers? What do they think?
Well, of course, the teams want to play, too, because they can't make any money without any games. And even though they would lose, say, the 30%, roughly 30% of the revenue they get from fans in the stands, tickets sold, parking, concessions, they make money with their TV broadcasts. And if there are no games, it's going to put a lot of teams in a lot of difficult spots. So financially, obviously, baseball wants to get this thing going. But the difference, I believe, with baseball and some other sports is once you start it, you can't just stop it.
Yeah.
Because a couple guys got sick and got the virus. If they play like 2 weeks and say, all right, five guys have the virus, we're going to put the season off, we're going to pick it up again in a month, it doesn't work that way. You can't take a month away from this game and then come back and play it at a championship level. The game is just too hard to do that. So that's just one of the many roadblocks in the way of trying to start without knowing with great certainty if it's a healthy game to play.
Analyst of Baseball Tonight, author of three books, Tim Kirchen, we love him, back with us, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. This is really, Tim, such an unprecedented time, a waiting game with the delay of the start of the 2020 season. But how does a shortened season help teams that have players with injury? I mean, what teams perhaps could this benefit?
Yes, I mean, the Yankees stand out the most. James Paxton is one of their best pitchers, is going to likely be healthy whenever they start to pick this up, and he was going to miss at least 2 months of the season. Aaron Judge has all sorts of injuries. So does Giancarlo Stanton. 2 years in a row, the Yankees have just been besieged with injuries, so they would benefit a great deal. But I think it's the not-so-great teams that at least potentially could benefit from a shorter schedule. The reason they play 162 games, at least Sparky Anderson always told me, is there are no excuses after 162.
Uh-huh.
You can't ever say we ran out of time. We only played 162 games.
Right.
And that's what the great teams can do. They can wear you down in a schedule that long, whereas the team that might not be nearly as good can get hot for 50 games or 60 games, and that might be enough to get a team into the playoffs, whereas after 100 or 120, maybe that team starts to fade. So there are a million ways to look at this, but I think this would not work to the benefit, a truncated schedule with the best teams in baseball.
Providing our baseball fix tonight is Tim Kirchen from ESPN. Check him out, ESPN.com. Of course, author of three books. We got plenty of time to read. Google that on Amazon.com and pick up his latest release. You can follow him at Kirchen_ESPN. What a great way to always celebrate baseball. We're ready for it to get back. Thank you so much, Timmy. We appreciate your time.
My pleasure, Alyssa. Take care. Stay safe.
Yes, sir. Much more coming your way here in Hour 1. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Come on back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. We love to connect with our audience. You can always join us live on Twitter at eRadioSports, info@eRadioSports.com, podcastarena.com. You can go back and listen to all of our guests from Hour 1 and Hour 2. And as always, thank O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. You can get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. Well, we're going to get you ready for the 2020 NFL draft. It will get underway next week. It will take place over 3 days. The new format due to COVID-19 this year it's going to be virtual, but we are so grateful. We're so thankful it is still going to happen. So we're going to break it all down one team at a time. And one in particular will be the Washington Redskins. That will be our focus in our next conversation. Our very special guest that is joining us this evening is the sports columnist from the Washington Post, and that is Barry Sverluga. Good evening, Barry. How are you?
Great. Hope you're doing well.
Listen, we are, and we appreciate you so much carving out some time. The NFL, of course, is preparing for an unprecedented, a unique draft as far as this format. It'll be a draft unlike no other with it being virtual. I guess my question, let's keep it light at first, Barry. I mean, do you think they can pull it off? There's a lot of risk as far as hopefully that Wi-Fi, it doesn't cut out, right?
You know, it's funny. I mean, Ron Rivera, the new Redskins head coach, had a video conference, some sort of leadership conference that he was hosting virtually late this week. And he was talking about his confidence in the system that they were going to use, and right then it cut out and the whole thing crashed. So I'm sure they're going to run a lot of mocks and make sure things are as smooth as possible. I would also think that anything technologically failed in the middle of somebody's time to pick, that they would be extended a little bit more time. But it'll be interesting for sure.
You know, there's always a lot of excitement when the NFL draft rolls around, but I have to tell you, I kind of feel mixed emotions because my heart goes out to the players and the young men. I mean, yes, they're ready to take that next step, but, you know, they always envisioned in their mind that they'd be walking across the stage in their brand new suit and shaking the hand of Roger Goodell. So a virtual format is not something I thought that they ever would dream of, right?
For sure. But I think they also, you know, could console themselves if we could exchange keeping the off-season program on the same schedule for starting a season on time or having a full 16-game season, then given the situation that the whole country and the whole world finds itself in right now, maybe that handshake kind of falls to the background. I'm sure the commissioner would be willing to take photos with all the first-rounders as he makes his way around to games this year to kind of make up for the moment lost.
Yes, safety first. Our very special guest joining us tonight at the next generation of sports radio, SB Nation Radio, is sports columnist with the Washington Post. You can check out all of his articles online. Barry Sverluga is with us. And you also have to think about the NBA draft. I wonder if they will adopt this type of format, too. I mean, draft prospects will live out their dreams via the Internet. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I think the NFL is sticking to its schedule. You know, it's the one sport that isn't in season right now that hasn't yet had a season disrupted. But I'm sure that their draft will serve as a model for the NBA. Major League Baseball, which doesn't have as high a profile a draft, has moved its draft a little bit back and is also trying to generate some, you know, some new publicity from doing it in a virtual way if they have to do it that way. So we'll see how next Thursday goes and then through the weekend. But certainly a lot of contingencies for a lot of different scenarios are being made across all the pro sports leagues.
Okay, so as the sports columnist with the Washington Post, I mean, Barry, what is your draft night? What's that going to look like for you?
Well, I mean, the Redskins are in such an interesting position. It's not like they just have, you know, the 20th pick and you're just kind of waiting and waiting and waiting. I mean, they, in a lot of ways, I think hold the keys to the draft. They have the number 2 pick. They have a new coach, a new regime in place. They are coming off a 3-13 season. That means they have a lot of holes on their roster. And there's so many different interesting ways that, they could go that could dictate, you know, what my life is like, that night. You know, if they have an incumbent quarterback that they took in the first round last year in Dwayne Haskins, but with a new regime on hand, you have to wonder what is Ron Rivera's evaluation of Haskins? What is the staff's evaluation of Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa? If they think Tua is greater than Haskins, it's in fact a franchise quarterback who could be their guy for the next 10 years, do they snap him up and move on from Haskins very quickly? Do they take Chase Young from Ohio State, who some people think is a generational talent, could really transform their defense? Ron Rivera is a defensive guy. He hired Jack Del Rio, an established defensive coordinator. That could be an attractive option. Or, you know, the thing that would really blow up the night would be, do they trade back? I think that Miami is the obvious trade partner that people look at. The Dolphins have 4 of the top 40 picks in the draft, including 3 in the first round. And that includes number 5, meaning, you know, the Redskins could potentially, if Miami was a willing partner, still get a very, very good player at number 5 that addresses one of their many needs, but also add additional bodies down lower in the draft. So they really kind of, as I said, hold the keys here a little bit. And it'll be fascinating to see which direction they go.
Okay, you talk about the new head coach, Ron Rivera, his system, a defensive guy. Is there one particular player that would be very attractive that could come in and make an immediate difference?
Well, Young is the obvious one. I mean, he had 18 sacks last year at Ohio State. Some rating services have him, you know, kind of as a generational talent. Rivera plays a 4-3 defense, and edge rusher is extremely important. And, you know, you would liken him to Julius Peppers from Rivera's heyday in Carolina. So Young, he's also a local guy. He grew up in suburban Washington in Maryland, went to DeMatha High School, so there's a cool tie there. But as I said, I find the most attractive option to trade back because, as I mentioned, if the trading partner was Miami and you're able to get that fifth pick, then you could not only, you know, Chase Young is going to be off the board then, but maybe a player like Clemson's Isaiah Simmons, who is a really versatile defender, can play all over the field, might be a glimpse of what a prototypical impact defender becomes in the future. You could get a player like that. You could get a cornerback, which the Redskins badly need. Okuda from Ohio State comes to mind. So I think Rivera said in a conference call with reporters last week that he has a history of starting rookies each and every year. He is not afraid to play young guys if they're ready to play. So if that's the case and the Redskins have a lot of different holes, I think it's possible that if they're able to pull off a trade, they'd end up with multiple young players that he could put on the field right away and develop quickly.
Sports columnist with the Washington Post. We are wrapping up our time here in Hour 1, SB Nation Radio. Barry Sverluga is with us tonight for the first time. So what's your gut tell you? I mean, how good do you think the Redskins will be in 2020? And you guys have got to be pretty optimistic and excited with a brand new coach, a brand new system, and how it's all ultimately going to work out.
Well, I mean, so much depends on this draft, and this draft, so much of that depends on what they think of Dwayne Haskins as the incumbent quarterback. Rivera already brought in Kyle Allen from Carolina, traded for him, somebody that he's obviously familiar with. I think we view that mostly as an insurance policy if the off-season programs are truncated and there's a limited training camp because of the pandemic. At least he's got somebody in the building who knows the offense and he's confident in running it. I think that kind of the optimism for Rivera's tenure is real, but it's also separate from any optimism for the 2020 season. This team was 3-13 last year for a reason. They're in a battle with their longtime left tackle, Trent Williams. He could be on his way out. They need a cornerback. They need a receiver. They need a linebacker. They need an edge rusher. There's a lot of holes here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think everybody feels like it's pointed in the right direction. But it's a long, long time since there's been sustained success for a franchise that used to be a pillar of the NFL, and people will want to see progress before they declare victory around here.
Yeah, Barry, I know Redskin fans, they are ready for winning football. My last question for you is, why do you think the Redskins pushed so hard to hire Ron Rivera? I mean, what was your grade on this move?
Well, I mean, obviously, he's a very respected football person, but also just a very respected person, and that matters. He kind of brings a dignity, a sense of order to the organization that had been a little frenetic. I mean, it's 21 years of Dan Snyder's ownership. They haven't been to back-to-back playoffs during that time. There's been, they rank in terms of victories, regular season victories in that time, down with Buffalo and Cleveland and Jacksonville among, the lowest in the league. So there's kind of become a pessimism ingrained in the fan base. But I do think that Rivera, his hiring was well-regarded because of his stature, because of his record with Carolina, and because Dan Snyder in the hiring process seemed to say the best way for an organization to be run is for the head coach to have the most power. And so he has seemingly empowered his new hire to make the changes he felt were necessary in the personnel department, to hire his staff, to have final decision-making, say, in whatever happens. So this draft is going to be the first real reflection we get on what Ron Rivera wants his football team to look like, and I think people are kind of excited to get a glimpse of it.
And Ron Rivera did not take long to make some moves. Of course, he hired Jack Del Rio as the defensive coordinator, and it's going to be really interesting to watch from afar down here in Houston just how quickly they can turn this team and this organization around. Our very special guest has been sports columnist with the Washington Post, and that is Barry Sverluga. Barry, quickly connect with our audience, and where can they go and find out some more of your content and your articles?
WashingtonPost.com. They're all there, as well as much of other great sports writing from my colleagues.
Thank you so much for weighing in on the 2020 NFL Draft. We look forward to it next week. Stay safe, my friend. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Of course, much more coming your way. We're going to get ready to go inside the ropes with former PGA Tour player Larry Miller.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, it's Friday night. Welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Many different ways to connect. You can always join us live on Twitter. We love to hear from our audience and to interact. You can join us at eradiosportsinfo, eradiosports.com, and podcastarena.com. As always, trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know exactly what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. It is time to go back inside the ropes. We are going to visit with former PGA Tour player and author, the great Larry Miller. Good evening, Larry.
Good evening. Good evening, everybody. Nice to be back again, and glad we're able to do this every week and keep golf at the forefront of our thoughts.
Absolutely. Always one of our big highlights on our shows. Looking forward to this conversation. And I tell you, Larry, it seems like we're getting some good news, because this week the Colonial What is going to move forward, and it's going to be the PGA Tour's first event.
That is great news, and let's hope that it creates a domino effect, and maybe that'll be the lead off to get things going again and get people to be able to get out and just start. It's just a start, and that's what we need. We had to have a start. Things have been so stagnant now for weeks, with no activity, no hope, no optimism. Now we've got that, and let's hope it's. And I think it's going to follow with other sports in certain venues. And it's not going to be all at once, but if we can just get it going, at least started, then it's going to keep going, and it's going to build and build and build. So that's exciting, can't wait. I'm glad Texas is going to be the one to step up and do it, and it's going to be fun. Can't wait.
Well, this could be the PGA Tour's first event since having it suspended its season, and I think as a player, I mean, this is something they can finally look forward to. There is a date on the calendar, and now, Larry, their mindset can be, okay, this is what I've got to be working on as I prepare to play at the Colonial in Fort Worth.
Well, and now they have a reason to work and practice. When you're sitting there with possibly months ahead of you with no competition, there's very little incentive really to really work hard at your game. But now I'll bet guys are out beating balls this morning. because now there's an incentive. Now there's a goal in sight. There was no goal in sight before, but now there is a concrete goal. And what a great tournament that is. What a great golf course, and what a great place to start, to restart, the PGA Tour. It's always been one of the most popular events among the players and the fans, at Colonial. So I think that's going to give all of us incentive to get the sticks out, and start swinging and get ready, because it won't be too much longer we'll be on those fairways again.
So I have to wonder, Larry, with the Colonial still being on, how will an event like this play differently without fans? Players, you feed off of the energy of the crowd.
No question about it. It really does get the adrenaline going when you make a putt or hit a great shot and the crowd, reacts loudly like that, and it really gets you going. I've experienced it myself a few times, and boy, it makes the hair stand up on your arms when that happens. So you're not going to have that, and that is going to, I think, detract from the excitement that the players feel. But you know what? Golf is in the end, ultimately, it's a solitary game. Whether you're playing alone in the evening by yourself with no one around, or 100,000 people in the stadium there at Scottsdale or Phoenix. And so it's still a solitary game. And you're hitting shot after shot. Each one counts as much as the other. And that's what it really boils down to. So I think you're going to see these world-class performers perform just as well playing that way as they do with the fans, but they're going to miss the fans for sure.
They're going to miss the fans. This is also going to bring back probably a lot of memories of those good old days of playing junior golf, right? You don't have a big gallery.
That's right. That's right. It's you have to clap for yourself. Or in my case, my mother, she'd stand there behind the green. One time I made an 8-footer for a double bogey, and she didn't know anything about golf, and she's clapping like crazy. And I just made a double bogey, and I walked over and I said, "Mother, don't ever do that again."
Oh, bless her heart. Hey, glad you're with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio. We always look forward to a very special conversation as we go inside the ropes with former PGA Tour player, and that is Larry Miller. You bet, we've been talking about a tournament that we can look forward to. Mark it down, June 11th through the 14th at the Colonial Country Club in Fort Worth. It'll be the PGA Tour's first event since everything was shut down since the COVID-19 in the month of March. Tell me this, Larry. Have you ever played the Colonial Country Club? We've been there many, many times.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, I have.
Yeah, what was that experience like? It's pretty tight.
Yeah, you know, I've played that course really well because I'm, as you know, you've seen me play. I'm not a bomber, you know. I mean, in my prime, I was 265 or 270 at the best if it was dry. So I've never been a big bomber, but I've been very, very straight my whole career. And so I played Colonial well because I kept the ball in play all day and, you know, pretty good iron player, so in short game. So I didn't have any trouble with it. But some of the guys that are longer and a little bit more erratic off the tee, they have problems with a lot of the holes there because, it can be very tight. It's some of the holes look like a bowling lane.
Hey, Larry Miller with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Golf's return right here in North Texas. Looking forward to that in the month of June. Let's rewind just a moment and get your thoughts on the replay last week of the 2019 Masters. Such an epic win for Tiger. We have talked about it so much on the program, but I thought what was pretty cool was the interview with Jim Nance and Tiger, and God bless Tiger. He got pretty emotional reliving his win and just kind of talking about how special it was walking off and hugging his family and his mom.
Well, one of the great moments in sports history, I think, that comeback of his. And, of course, Jim Nance is such a, you know, Jim Nance is, a, to me, one of the premier, you know, telecasters, broadcasters, yes, whatever you want to call it, interviewers. And he's, you know, he is so good that I think he brought out the inner thoughts of Tiger for sure, just being Jim Nance. And, you know, as an aside, I don't know how many people know this, but Jim Nance was a teammate on the golf team at Houston University with Fred Couples.
Yes.
And he was Freddie's roommate when they were teammates on the golf team. So Jim Nance is quite a player. And another thing about him is his house in California, he has a replica of number 7 at Pebble Beach, the short par 3, in his backyard, an exact replica. And he's got a little plaque there of all the celebrities and PGA players that have come and hit shots on his little hole and made hole-in-ones. He's got all their names up on a plaque.
He's got a
but
sweet
he's a
setup.
Great interviewer, and he brought out Tiger's, I think, emotions and deepest thoughts.
I was watching a special on ESPN hosted by Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady, they were at Jim Nance's house enjoying his backyard for sure. But anyways, going back to Tiger, it was so cool to watch him once again, you know, to celebrate his return to glory with his mom and his children, an unforgettable image. But I thought what was really interesting too is, you know, Tiger said that if the Masters would have been played last week, he was ready. I mean, he was starting to peak and was going to be in form. And this time off has definitely helped him as far as taking care of some of those lingering injuries.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be of benefit to him. If he was ready for Augusta, then that's a good sign. That means that his body, you know, heals well after playing. It recuperates fast, and sounds really good. It sounds very optimistic for once they start playing again for the way he's going to perform. So that's great news. It's great for the game. I know all the players. Well, some of the players don't like it because that's you know, somebody they have to beat for sure. But I think they all recognize the fact that Tiger, you know, he's the, you know, he's, I mean, he doesn't raise the bar. He is the bar. And he, you know, when he's in the field, you're going to have just great interest in the tournament, great crowds and everything else. And the players appreciate that. And plus, I think they also appreciate what he's done, that he's been able to overcome all that adversity and come back like he has, says a lot about his inner strength.
We look forward to the Masters. It'll be November 12th through the 15th. Wait and see at this point. Hopefully it will play. But I think one of the things I appreciated, too, with all these replays of the Masters was Bubba Watson and the replay of 2012 and 2014. He's pretty special, and boy, he hit some big-time shots. I forgot about some of those, Larry.
You know, the interesting thing about Bubba Watson is that he never hits a straight shot. You know, he works the ball left to right to left on every shot, even with wedges. And there were two other players in the history of the game, Chichi Rodriguez and the late Doug Sanders, who just passed away a few days ago.
Yes.
Those guys, just like Bubba, they would hit every shot that they played left to right or right to left. And here's the theory behind it. Chichi said that if you hit a straight shot and aim at the flag, any deviation is moving away from the flag. But if you work the ball left to right or right to left toward the flag, it's always working in the direction of the flag. So there's a lot of logic to that. And it makes a lot of sense, and I think that's contributed to a great deal of Bubba Watson's success, along with his great length. And that theory was no better exemplified than that wedge he hit on number 10,
yes,
where nobody else in the world could hit that shot, you know, to hook a sand wedge 80 yards and have it land, you know, within 15 feet of the hole. That was one of the most memorable and incredible shots, I think, in the history of the Masters.
Larry, it was like a curveball, and you know, and he was hitting off pine straw on the 10th hole.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that shows you how he can work the ball, and that's what he does. He hits, like I say, even he can be in the middle of the fairway from 110 yards with a sand wedge, and he's going to hook it in or slice it in. You know, he plays the ball to work toward the flag and to have it spin toward the hole when it lands. And that's the way he plays, and he's able to do it with tremendous eye-hand coordination.
Our PGA News and Notes continues with Larry Miller after this quick break.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour one, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's rejoin and go inside the ropes with Larry Miller. Larry Miller is a life member of the PGA of America and former PGA Tour player and author of four books on golf and performance. He's currently working on his fifth book. You can check him out, LarryMillerGolf.com, LarryMillerGolf.com. Let's talk some more about Bubba Watson and maybe expand on how you would describe and how he has developed, I mean, his golf swing. Break it down, dissect it for us, because I mean, he didn't have a swing coach growing up. I mean, what's the backstory on Bubba Watson?
Well, first of all, to you know, define and talk about his swing, I'd have to have a slide rule, you know, to figure it out. I mean, he's got so many different loops and angles, you know.
Uh-huh.
His nickname should be Six Flags, because he's got more loops than a roller coaster does. And he, you know, but he's, what he does is it's kind of like Furyk. Furyk is a little mini, you know, version of Bubba.
Loopy.
He's got, you know, a couple of loops in his swing, but he doesn't work the ball as much as Bubba does. But and if you watch him, he's off balance most of the time. Now he's a big guy. He's tall. Got a lot of leverage, and he's got that backswing like John Daly almost, where it goes way past parallel. So he gets a lot of power from his leverage and from his long backswing, and he's very flexible. So he's got a big turn. But it's his hands, Alyssa. It's his hands that create all this great stuff. He's got unbelievable hands. The guy probably would have been a great, you know, any sport that involves a ball and eye-hand coordination. And that's where it comes from. But it's off balance. It's loopy. But if you watch if you would take a snapshot at impact with the ball, it would look no different than any other elite player. So somehow he manages to whip that club all over the place and then adjust and compensate. But by the time he gets into the hitting area, it's perfect. And if you look at him at impact, mm-hmm, against anybody else, and it looks the same. And that's the key to golf, really, is where that club is at when it impacts the ball. That's all that matters. Some players have the coordination to do it that way, and others have to do it more traditionally. But he's just gifted with great hands.
Bubba Watson, 6'3", 180 pounds. But one thing you've always taught our boys is balance equals power. But you were just talking about how Bubba Watson, I mean, he does look off balance. And, my curiosity was, how does he generate so much power through the hitting zone? So he just gets it all figured out right at impact?
Well, he's able to be balanced at impact. That's why I say if you take a snapshot at impact,
Well,
he's perfectly balanced. But he's not well balanced on the backswing, and he's not balanced at the finish. And that's because of all the movement the club is doing. But somehow, because he's so gifted with coordination, he's able to get down into the hitting area. And at that point, from maybe 3 feet below or 3 feet before impact with the ball and 3 feet after, he's perfect, and he's on balance there. He's just able to make all those moves and still achieve balance when he has to have it. And that's the difference. But it's not something you would teach, for sure. You would never teach anything like that to a youngster starting out in the game. But he's never had a coach, and he just he's a natural. He's just a natural, kind of like Sam Snead was. Sam Snead. Now, Sam Snead had a beautiful, traditional, gorgeous golf swing. But he never had a coach or teacher. He just picked up a stick and started swinging, and he was just a natural. Every now and then in sports, you get these naturals who just, they can just do it. And, he's one of them.
Bubba Watson won 2 times at the Masters, 2012, 2014, and a 10-time winner on the PGA Tour. We are up against the clock. So much more that I want to get into. We'll continue this conversation next week. We love him. That is Larry Miller, former PGA Tour pro. Check him out, LarryMillerGolf.com. Have a great weekend with Connie, and we look forward to next week. Thank you, Larry.
Great. Get those clubs polished off, and we'll talk next week.
Yes, sir. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio.